All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
All right, welcome back to a special end of year crossover edition of the Oasis podcast and the Rain podcast, the rock alternative and in the news. And I'm joined by who else, who other than our good friend Richard Bowes. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm all right, mate. How are you? Well, I'm a little bit jaded. I went a little bit hungover. So I went to a gig last night and obviously pretty devastated about the double whammy of musical legend deaths we've had this morning. But yeah, I'm all right. Apart from that, counting down the days till Christmas.
Yeah. So we're recording this on Tuesday, the 20th of December, 2022. And yeah, so last night, just before I was about to go to bed, the news came through that Terry Hall had died, which was gutting. And and I was, you know, preparing, sort of, I was listening to a few more things that I'd sort of not got around to listening to, or sort of thought I'd best listen to again in preparation for today. And I just thought, you know what, no, I can't, I've just got to listen to Terry Hall now. That's it. Because, you know, and then the news came through this morning, Martin Duffy died, the Primal Scream keyboard player. So yeah, that was both, you know, both massively important in sort of different ways, obviously. Like, personally for me, Terry Hall, I just tweeted about it this morning, like, my first memory of Terry Hall was because my sister had a Madness VHS video, and when I was a kid, I would just watch the Madness music videos on this VHS tape. So I've always loved Madness, and there's a brilliant moment in a Driving in My Car video when they drive past Funboy 3 and Terry's holding a sign that says Coventry or bust. And you know, and I've always, and I think my sister said at the time, like, oh, that's Funboy 3, that's Terry Hall, he was in the Specials, loaded out. I was like, aha, okay, clock that. And then, yeah, so later on into the Britpop years, when Terry Hall did a load of stuff with Damon, you know, and obviously Damon was a massive fan of the Specials. So, yeah, went back and listened to his stuff then. And his 90s stuff I thought was great as well. But, yeah, so he's a massively important figure in the Britpop movement. The only Oasis connection, really, unless you can tell me otherwise, is that Charlotte from Noel's band, The Volume Curb, her under her name, The Volume Curb, recorded a song called Mind Distorted that featured Noel Gallagher and Terry Hall. Now, I don't think they actually performed together on it. I think it feels like they both shifted, because I think, if I remember, because I interviewed Charlotte, I think like she'd recorded it years ago with Terry Hall and his son, and then like got Noel to put on an extra bit when she released it. So I don't think they ever recorded anything together, as far as I'm aware. Obviously, he was much more linked to sort of Damon and that side of it. But yeah, massive loss. Only when I'm a parasite, I creep about at night. Nightclub is a secret place to be. Nightclub, what am I doing here? Nightclub, watching the girls go by, spending money. I don't work. What's your thoughts on Terry Hall?
Yeah, that's just to yourself, massive loss. I mean, I couldn't have picked up that. I would, without going into extensive research, I wouldn't have known that Charlotte fact off the top of my head. And yeah, I can't think of any other Oasis links. I mean, yeah, it's just, I think he's so young. I think like that's why I think it's quite a shock. It's like when like Andrew Weatherall died. You know, it's like oof. You know, just a little bit. You know, hardly an old man at all. But also, you know, one of the genuine greats. I mean, you know, when you're talking about debut albums, the Specials debut should be up there, certainly in terms of like importance. For me personally, I've got a special kinship with the Specials because Ghost Town was number one when I was born, so always felt kind of a bond with that. But he had a kind of seething anger to him, but it was always like dignified, and he's always very much on the right side of the argument. And you can see the kind of outpouring of love on social media today. Like he was one of the good ones. You know what I mean? He was. No one's got a bad word to say about him. And a really kind of prolific. Yeah, so a really kind of prolific and diverse career. And yeah, I saw the specials a couple of times actually. I saw them on the V Festival in 2009, the same site at which Oasis did the last gig. I thought they were really good. But then I saw them at their own show in Coventry, sorry, not in Coventry, in Bristol 3 years ago. And it was just before, I think it was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days before the Conservative leadership election for 2019 was announced, and obviously that was Boris Johnson. So the specials seemed a quite appropriate appropriate band to be watching at that time. And obviously they had their say on that, which I was, you know, was kind of tapped into what I and much of the rest of the crowd was thinking. And you imagine they probably always had, where he always had that kind of, the ability to speak to people sort of kind of throughout his career. So yeah, huge loss, really, yeah, massive loss. And then Martin Duffy, who we'll obviously come on to, it's just, yeah, it feels like it's been a particularly bad kind of period. Well, Wilco Johnson as well, and Christine McVie, and yeah, it seems like it's that people are going quite rapid succession. Maybe that's a sign of age, but yes, it's a sad time to be a music fan, really.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah, Wilco has died since we last called, and Christine McVie of Fleetwood Mac. But yeah, I think that the Martin Duffy thing, it's been interesting. Obviously, he's not as upfront and as big a character and everything as Terry Hall was, but hugely important in Primal Scream. You know, if you think about the way it was often his keyboards and everything that were then sampled and messed around to be the backdrop of the Screamadelica album, the fact he stepped in, you know, I saw Tim Burgess tweeted this morning that, you know, he was so important that after Rob Collins had died, he stepped in and helped them out and to play Nebworth, to just come in at such short notice to have just learned their entire set and save the day, really. And Tim said this morning that if it wasn't for that, they maybe would have never played again, you know, and it's incredible, really. And then his piano playing, you know, having gone from the much more organ sound to then the sort of the honky tonk kind of piano playing on there, you know, on their sort of Give Out But Don't Give Up era. You know, he's just so talented and such an amazing part of their sound all the way through. And he was even younger. He was 55. You know, Terry Hall was 63. Obviously, we don't know. Terry Hall, it was a short illness. We don't know what it was with Duffy. We'll just have to see. But, you know, what a legend.
As you say, with Martin Duffy, to me, he always brought the swing. Like, whenever I saw him live, it was always, as you say, the kind of honky-tonk stuff, like Rocks and Country Girl and all that sort of stuff. He always seemed to be most active for that. But yeah, you've got, when you think about Primal Scream's their diverse career from, you know, I mean, he played on the first two albums as well, but he wasn't an official member of the band until 89, just before Screamadelica. But then you've got those first two albums, the kind of, your one's kind of quite bay indie pop, and then you've got, it's like rockier second album, and then all the way throughout, you know, Screamadelica, Exterminator, as I mentioned, the Give Out But Don't Give Up era. Yeah, they kind of often mix up their sound. He was there throughout that entire time, and therefore, you know, contributed so much. And yeah, no age. And yeah, once again, I think he's worked with Weller, worked with Charlatans. I think he's done stuff with Chemical Brothers. You know, he's obviously well loved in the industry. And another massive loss to Primal Scream as well, obviously, because, you know, they're it's only really Innes and Bobby G left now from the heyday. So just really sad. Really sad.
Yeah. Yeah, very sad, very sad to lose them. They will be missed. Nothing lasts forever. So sad to lose your love. I've been crazy since you left. I'm sorry for what I've done. Why did you go? Why did you go? Have you ever had a broken heart? Have you ever lost your mind? Have you ever woke up screaming? 'Cause you're so lonely you could die. Why did you go? Why did you go? I'm lonely, baby. Cry, cry, cry. Cry, cry, cry. I'm gonna cry myself blind.
All right, well, look, yeah, it's a sad way to start it, but we're talking about a bit of a 2022 year in review from both the Oasis side and the more general
you know, rock, alternative, indie world that we cover on the Rain podcast. And if you guys don't know, then head over to the Oasis podcast Britpop. No, what is it? Oasis podcast B-sides channel, where you then have, there's been a few more Rain episodes over there. And yeah, so it's that time of year. We're coming up to the end of the year. It's been a fun year as for Oasis fans. It's been, obviously we had, you know, there's been a few bits and pieces going on. The main thing, obviously, we had a Liam album. We had Nebworth and some other big gigs. We had Noel at Glastonbury and some, you know, and we had the Pretty Boy single at the end of the year. Remains to be seen whether he'll give us something on December the 31st again. So then that'll be like, oh, no, but we've already done our review of the year and then you chuck it in the 31st. So, yeah, what's been your highlights of the year as an Oasis fan?
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, obviously the big one is Liam at Nebworth, but I didn't go to that, so I don't really care. Although having seen so much about it, like I feel like I did, you know, it's been, you know, having, I guess, more so than it would have been in 96, you know, because we live in the age of instant information. You know, I've heard people, I mean, when you put the tweet out yesterday about what the highlight was, you know, Nebworth was the common theme. But, you know, having watched the film, having seen a lot of the footage, having spoken to a lot of people that were there, I feel like I was there. You know, because it's been so common throughout the year. So obviously that, but just his huge summer, his huge summer shows. I mean, I myself saw him in Cardiff, but yeah, he also had City of Manchester, you know, he had Dublin, he had Glasgow. And, you know, to compliment what I still think is his best solo album. I mean, I saw someone put on Twitter yesterday that, you know, he kind of wrong-footed by putting out a bunch of rubbish singles before releasing the album. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, but I think it's his best album. I think we can kind of come on to Noel, but I think yeah, it's been a very successful year for Liam. Not ended quite so well. He's gone quite quiet, obviously, because he had a bit of a controversy around the football. So he's kind of gone a little bit quiet. But he's certainly on the live stage. Well, in all areas, he's been firing on all cylinders all year, I think.
Yeah, he's come back on this morning. So he's done his first tweets this morning since the 25th of November, which was just RIP tweets about Duffy and Terry Hall, which is fair enough. Yeah, I think sort of when they do something controversial, they just sort of have to lay low for a bit, don't they? And then they sort of creep back in, similar to like Noel after the disabled comments at Glastonbury. The fact that then Matt Morgan just took away all the podcasts and he's gradually sort of been putting them back out again now. Mm. Now that like the sort of the furore's died down. Yeah, so he sort of crept back in after those, yeah, pretty rude things to have said. I'm just actually, you mentioned there, I did put a tweet out yesterday. So let's give some of your thoughts on what was what was your musical highlights, Oasis or otherwise. JFay the YY said, I had a good 4 days break taking in the Etihad gig and stayed in Manchester for a few days and headed to Nebworth. But I must say the Teenage Cancer Trust gig blew both of those out of the water. Also visiting the, some might say, station ticked off one of my Oasis geek things. Yeah, I need to get up to that station. But yeah, that was the other thing we need to talk about. You went to the Peter Blake Teenage Cancer Trust. We haven't talked about that. How was that?
Oh, yeah, it was brilliant. Yes, a couple of weeks ago now. So we have like 2-3 weeks ago now. yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, it was in celebration, for those who don't know, it was in celebration of Peter Blake's 90th birthday with contributions, well, gig sets from Back to the Jury, Chrissy Hynde, Weller himself, or Paul Weller, sorry, who created the whole thing, sorry, Noel, The Who, and Madness. So quite a kind of heady lineup, all relatively short. Back to the Jury was really good. He did 4 or 5 songs and kind of brought his kind of like dubby electro sound to the gig, which was really good. And he and his dad had good relations with Peter Blake, so he kind of contributed. Chrissy Hynde was brilliant. I mean, I can generally take or leave the Pretenders, but Chrissy Hynde, what did she do? She did the Kinks cover. She did 2,000 Miles, because she was like, well, it's December now, we can play this song. So obviously that was, you know, really helped the atmosphere. Don't Get Me Wrong. And she did a cover of I Could Be So Good For You by Dennis Waterman, which was random, obviously. But she was like, I fancied this guy back in, you know, this back in the 70s. I really had a real crush on Dennis Waterman. And then when she finished the song, she was like, what? I genuinely think that's a great song. Okay,
it is a great song, to be fair. If you want to change your situation,
ocean. I've got a good idea. Just you keep me near. I'll be so good for you.
I'll be so good for you.
I'll be right by your side.
You're like a wall of nature.
There ain't nothing you can hide. Not for me. I'll be so good for you.
One of the things I was going to say, Chrissy Hynde. So, you know, the did you watch the Pistol Show on Disney Plus?
Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, actually. I think it was, it had its issue. I had my issues with it. But one of the things that really stood out was, and if people don't know, like, Chrissy Hynde was such an important part of that whole scene. She was there. She was almost in the Clash. She was almost in the Pistol. She was just around. And it was sort of that. The fact that there was this sort of misogynistic kind of, oh, it's a girl, and so she was never sort of around in those bands, even though she was, like, by far the most talented and has gone on to be, like, the most successful. And I love the way that the Pistol end, having so much of it being sort of through her eyes. And then, and then you see them rehearsing. I think it's Brass in Pocket they're rehearsing. And it comes up like at the end, like, oh, what happened to them all? It's like, yeah, all these other dickheads, some of whom died, some of whom ended up doing Country Life butter adverts. And then Chrissy Hynde, yeah, went on to be fucking megastar, multi-million selling album. It's like, yeah, fair play. fair play.
Funny, I just finished reading John Lydon's autobiography, Anger Is an Edgy. And she's barely mentioned in that either. This is quite, I don't know that they, yeah, I think obviously she was, well, according to the TV show, she was more associated with Steve Jones. But yeah, funny. You think she'd be quite a prominent name. But I mean, the Pistols era, sorry, is quite skirted over anyway in the book generally. Right. But yeah, she was very much the forgotten figure of the era, if the TV show is to be believed. But so she was brilliant. Then it was Weller who, it was all right. It was acoustic Weller set. And I've got to be honest, half the time, it wasn't like him playing acoustic versions of songs. It was like the pastoral stuff he does.
Okay.
Like from True Meanings a couple of years ago and stuff like that, which I can take or leave, to be honest, which was fine. And then there was an interval. And then Noel, Jess, Mike Rowe and Gem came out and went straight into Stand By Me. Noel's the first time Noel sang that since 1997. I personally think it's a bit of a power move by Noel to be like, just a reminder, just a reminder who wrote this one. But that was great. Then Wonderwall. Then he did that that wonderful version of Live Forever that he did for Joe Wiley, Radio 2 last year, which was kind of pretty spellbinding actually. I think that version so good, it's beautiful. It's so good. So it was nice to kind of see that because I predicted he was going to do that at Glastonbury. He didn't. So it was nice to kind of tick that one off. And I would think he'll probably be playing that next year when he tours. And then finished on Don't Look Back in Anger, obviously. Which is fine. You are a bit like, you have four songs, you could have dropped one of them. Do you know what I mean? You didn't have to play both Wonderwall and Don't Look Back. When you've got Live Forever as well, it's like, all right, but anyway, but it was still, it was kind of spellbinding. And then I thought Noel was gonna be the highlight, but then Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend had a bit of a chat with the compere, and then they brought in it's like semi-acoustic bands, and they did seven or eight tunes, and they were incredible, absolutely incredible. Like, Roger Daltrey's voice, I would say, probably sounds as good as it ever has done, if not better. Like, the stuff the way he chooses the notes now, obviously it's a bit lower, more of a lower in tone, obviously can't reach the high notes, but the stuff he does is phenomenal. And yeah, what was it? Pinball Wizards, Substitute, Kids Are All Right, Won't Get Fooled Again, I think it's Tattoo and Substitute, I say that. It was just just a phenomenal set. And it was closed by Madness, who were fine. If you like Madness, I'm not a huge fan myself, but they were good fun. It was like they were like the headliners. They did like an 8 or 9 track set, but yeah, just a, yeah, it's the really yeah beautiful evening, and obviously all for charity, and yeah, that's why you've always got to go for the charity gigs. I always think, I think if you see these charity gigs that thing up come up, you think, right, there's gonna be something special there, and it was yeah, well worth the not cheap fee that it was to go.
Yeah, it was 100 quid plus, wasn't it?
I was in the store, so it was, I want to say it was 80 quid. I don't remember. It was a few months ago now that I bought a ticket or something like that.
Yeah, really expensive.
Yeah, but it's a charity gig, and you know, it's a special occasion. Don't mind in those instances. But yeah, brilliant night. Yeah, and made me. I've seen The Who before, but they're touring the States next year, and I'm like, if they come over here, I'm definitely getting tickets to see them again. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, awesome. Let's see what other people said. DD said 2022 highlight was Liam in Sydney, of course. This was the first time I'd seen Liam in a long time. I screamed like a baby. It was a massive few months for LG this year. The album release and Nebworth. Wow, take me back to May, June, July 22. Unforgettable times for us all. Yeah, massive for the Aussies. And we had Jessica Reese as well. So those two actually both recorded us messages around that time. Seeing Liam play live in Sydney, great show. I also love seeing his Nebworth documentary in the cinemas. I just had this huge grin on my face through the whole thing. Yeah, I've talked a couple of times about the Nebworth doc. You've seen that now, haven't you? I didn't think you were too impressed, if I remember.
No, I thought it was quite good. I liked that it was kind of dealt with the kind of modern society and the issues that are going on in the wider world. I thought that was quite interesting, because it could have been quite hands off with that, but it was that stuff I found quite good and quite pleasing. But yeah, the kind of common complaint of everyone really, it was like the original Nebworth film was last year. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like, and the gig was only 6 months ago. It doesn't feel like enough time had elapsed really. It's kind of added to the, I don't know, kind of condensing it all in the space 6 months kind of just added to the, you know, how much of a, well, when you direct, it's encouraging direct comparisons to the original time, I guess, which to me seems a bit of a fool's errand, but you know, good on Liam and all that, and it's an astonishing achievement. But yeah, I think it's just a little bit too close to the hoopla that we had last year with the film and what have you. I think maybe give it a couple of years and watch it, I'll maybe get a little bit more from it. And obviously I didn't go to the gig, so you know, that's going to temper everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's always a little bit, yeah, it's always a bit more special if you were there, I suppose. Yeah. Who else we got? Simon Hughes, music highlight of the year for me was seeing Liam Gallagher at Nebworth with my sister, 26 years after we saw Oasis at the same venue. Watching Liam with my sister will always stir up nostalgia of when we were younger before technology and the internet took over. Craig Russell says LG at Nebworth in the new album. James Freestone, this is the one you mentioned. Highlight has to be Liam lowballing everyone's expectations for the new album with the first few releases, then unleash a great album. Yeah, I agree with that. I was a bit about Come On You Know and things. And so, yeah, when that came out, yeah, very impressed. And yeah, Susie in the Sky says, Liam at Nebworth, glorious and so emotional. What a year for him. And first time I'd seen him in 13 years. Other 22 highlights, Yard Act, Pete Doherty, Fontaines DC, Andy Bell, Miles Kane, Wonder Horse, Kasabian first album with Surge's lead singer, and Tom Meehan solo music. So I think that's a good segue as anything to transfer over to other stuff, I suppose. Sort of connective tissue here between Oasis and the other stuff would be Andy Bell. So Andy Bell put out a really good album. See, I'm fucking pro at this game, mate. Called Flicker, which was his second.
I mean, we barely mentioned Noel yet, but whatever.
Oh, haven't we all got? Oh, all right, well, yeah, well, he also did Pretty Boy, and he's announced some gigs. There you go. So Andy Bell did Flicker. Which is second proper solo album after the sort of the Glock releases as well. And yeah, I know you had this as one of your albums of the year, didn't you?
So I got reviewed it back in February. I was blown away by it. I couldn't believe how good it was. I think I made the comparison that it's kind of his white album, because it's obviously a double album, quite heady stuff. There's quite a lot of eclectic sounds, quite a lot of difference on there. But I mean, Andy's year as a whole, you know, he's just released a new EP, you know, with a cover of Snow Is Falling by Yoko Ono and a couple of other tunes. I can't remember if they're covers or not. He's done B-sides, you know, which is a lost art, but, you know, all the Flicker singles have B-sides. And then he's got Glock remixes, he's got acoustic version of the album. Like, I actually struggle to keep up with him this year, to be honest. There's always been a new release from him. But yeah, Flicker I thought was brilliant. Saw him live do an in-store at that he was doing the, was it Space Station? Space Commander thing he does, which was like, which I say was, to use the word again, like spellbinding. It was like just kind of hypnotic, kind of shoegazy stuff, and with his vocals on in the background with him just playing guitar. It was like, yeah, really kind of compelling to watch. But yeah, as I say, I would say I think something like Love would probably be my single of my ex Oasis single of the year, probably, over anything that Liam Warnell did. Yeah, wonderful. If people haven't listened to it yet, I can't recommend it enough. Yeah, full of surprises and full of treats, and yeah, just wonderful to see him firing on all cylinders.
Remember days of chasing and reeling, playing tunes to block out the bad dreams, lost in a reverie of future days. La 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 la, it's all been seen somewhere before me. Now time's not on our side. See the flicker as a fire starts to burn. It's not enough. Burn down the world for me. Use a mirror to remember and look back with something like.
Yeah, I thought I read your review of it before I'd listened to it. And I think your comment, like it's his White album, I think is brilliant. It's spot on. Yeah, this is basically his White album is how I sort of view it. And I think obviously my understanding is he'd written it and recorded a lot of things sort of from 2016 onwards. And with then, Gem. You know, it was in the last couple of years, then working with Gem and adding some extra bits and pieces to it and adding some, there's horns, there's piano, there's you know, as well as his sort of dreamy soundscapey ride sort of stuff. My only criticism, and it would definitely be up there in my top albums of the year, but my only criticism of it is there's certain songs on there. I think it has got lower moments. There's skip tracks in there, which you'd always expect with a double album length stuff. And obviously, you know, showing that he's got B-sides as well, he's just on a glut of putting out loads of great stuff, and I'd much rather have stuff than not. But I think there are some moments where you sort of think, okay, you know, I didn't necessarily need that to be. If that was like a bonus track on a, you know, bootleg session CD or something, then great. You know, I didn't necessarily think it was that strong. There's a few of them that sort of tick that box. And then the other side, I thought that there's some tracks that sounded to me like, oh, that would have been brilliant if Oasis had done it, or if Hurricane had done it, or if Ride had done it. It felt like, you know, the essence of a great song was in there, but with his sort of quite calm, quiet vocals and sort of the sort of slightly more understated production, you know, as I said, I just thought, oh, that would have been perfect. That could have been a great Hurricane song. You know what I mean? With a bit more, whether it Alex or Liam, like, or, you know, Mark Gardner even like belting it out. Mark didn't really belt, but, you know, Alex or Liam belting it out, and then with a bit more oomph behind it. But then that's just my preference, you know. And I did think, you know, I did like them all. You just sort of think, oh, that, if that was the demo, it would be great. But I'd love to hear the full recorded version of it. But no, like in terms of a collection of songs of all kinds of different genres, and, you know, with instrumentals and with, you know, piano based and the different styles, I thought it was a really, really special record.
Yeah, that's not even to say like the stuff he's been doing with Ride. Like I saw Ride twice this year on the belated Nowhere 30 tour. I think they did a Going Blank Again tour as well. I know they were down in Australia a couple of years ago. Yeah, I mean, once again, like, it's been, he has not been able to keep up with him with what Andy's doing. I mean, I know he said a couple of years ago, well, was it maybe the press release for this Flickr? I can't remember. But essentially he was so like moved or inspired by the death of Bowie that he was just like, right, just, you know, just get stuff, you know, work. Like the ethic that Paul Weller's got. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, just keep going. And yeah, quality control from that won't always be high, but as you say, you know, it's better to have that stuff, better to have that stuff than not. And yeah, you know, it's gonna be someone's favorite tune, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and what else have you got on your sort of albums of the year list? Obviously, you're a writer for various publications. I see you did a very good article breaking down your best stuff of the year for Live Forever.
Thank you. Yeah. I did the singles of the year for Live Forever. So I didn't get a chance to do the albums. I think the albums, you I mean, the general consensus is hard to argue. I think that the two kind of breakout indie bands have been Wet Leg and Yard Act. Wet Leg are a bit, I don't say popular because it's easy, but you know, they're more kind of traditional kind of songs, like catchy songs with hooks. But the lyrical content is like really dry and really wry, and very amusing, and so kind of, you know, they slayed the summer, as it were, as they kind of threw in the parlance. I personally prefer Yard Act because I think they're a little bit more subversive, but they're a bit wittier, and you know, I think there's only so much you can do within that boundary, that the confines of having like essentially a narrator or a spoken word rather than a singer over music. But I think to do something new with that was what I think what Yard Act did was great. And having seen them a couple of weeks ago, they've got a new, then finally done some new material, which sounds great as well. So I'd probably, certainly they would be my indie breakout of the year. The Car, Arctic Monkeys, I think it's great. Obviously I would say that, but I think it's, as things stand right now, I'd probably say it's my album of the year, but I know that it's got the benefit of being only 2 months old. So it's still fresher, but I think that was a wonderful piece of work. Fontaine DC's third album, Interfere, brilliant. Like a step on for them as a band as well. And they were like ubiquitous throughout the summer, and kind of really tore the album hard. But every time I saw them, they were kind of getting better. My only issue with them is similar to the issue I have with idols, is that they're all dressed completely differently. And it's just like, I'm old school in that respect. I'm like, I like a bit of uniformity within a band. You know what I mean? It's just that they're all just like, they look like they're from different bands. But you know, that's a sign of age and being traditional, I guess. Who else? What other great albums were there this year? I've gone blank. Those are probably the four or five I would leap out at me on the top of my head. But I think it's been like a vintage year actually. I think Daniel Avery did a really good album towards the end of the year. Who else has got The Chats? That was quite a good album. Leftfield's album, brilliant. Yeah, I think the kind of post COVID backlog was kind of cleared now. I think they're now at the stage where it's like, right, okay, it's getting a little more focused, and so are tours. You know, it's not everyone's not just touring because they couldn't for 18 months. It's now like, right, okay, they're going back to recording and stuff, and things are kind of settling down a bit. I think it's been a vintage year on all fronts, to be honest. What about you?
I think this year nothing has really jumped out at me as being like a magnificent 10 out of 10. I think that obviously I went and listened to a lot of the stuff that you picked out. Fontaine's DC, I appreciate more than I like, I think. I've never really enjoyed that sort of moody, angsty, dark music. It's never really been my kind of cup of tea. And I want to love Fontaine's DC more because they're an Irish band, and I always like, being of Irish heritage, I always kind of look out for the Irish bands and want to support them. And the fact that, like, one of the most critically acclaimed bands right now in the world is Irish, I think it's brilliant. I'm really pleased for them. But as I'd listen to it and I'm like, I appreciate it, but I just don't like it very much. I'm just like, nah, and all their albums have been different. And this one, there's been a few tracks really stood out to me and I really enjoyed. But overall, it's one of those where when it came out, I listened to it a couple of times while doing other stuff. And I was just like, yeah, I appreciate it, but it's just not for me, mate, and it's that's sort of how I feel about them. Whereas Yard Act is right in what I should love, right? It's right in my wheelhouse because I love, that sort of quirky spoken word style. Like I love The Streets, and the sound, the band have got that kind of early Arctic Monkeys kind of sound that I was saying when we talked about Arctic Monkeys, I was saying I miss that early Arctic sound and they've got that, and that tight kind of wound up with that sort of funny kind of vocal over the top in that sort of spoken word sort of style. But
I don't know. It's just something about him that doesn't grab me. You know, there's something about his stuff. I think it's like, it's clever, but it's sort of, I don't know. There's a few songs like Tall Poppies. I really liked that sort of that story about a guy growing up in a, you know, and I'm sort of drawn into that. I'm like, okay, where's this? This is interesting. I'm happy to hear, you know, that drew me in with like the poetry. But I think a lot of their other stuff, it just felt a little bit, I mean, there's great moments in the wordplay, but overall I just felt is a little bit on the nose at times. And I thought that the musicianship didn't really grab me as much. You know, I'm sort of like, okay, this is fine. This is a pretty basic. If it wasn't with the sort of the almost poetry over the top, it would be just a decent-y kind of mid-2000s-y The Rakes or something sort of style band. Whereas that obviously that's their sort of USP. But yeah, I was just like, eh.
He was the most handsome in a class of 22, and he knew it early on, so his confidence kept growing. By 13, he had been with every girl deemed worth it to be with in the village, 2 years either side of his birthday. He played football, boy could he play, he played every single day, and he still does. A scout from Crewe Alexander came to watch him once, and they said that they were gonna be in touch.
And I'm going to be honest, I know it's good for them, for their views and for their social media and stuff, but Elton John, I'm not having it, mate. I'm not having it.
What are you talking about? Elton John's a legend. What are you talking about?
He was a legend in like 1973. He's not a legend now.
Mate, anyone who's worked with John Lennon and Eminem and George Michael is all right by me. And that headline set next year at Glastonbury is going to be insane. The amount of people he's going to bring out, he's probably like resurrect all of Michael, and like Britney Spears is going to be there. It's going to be mental. How could you not love that?
I love it, and
he's a good egg as well. Do you know what I mean? We're going back a couple of years now, but you know, the I'm Still Standing lockdown video, you know, I'm Jill Dando, that was, you know, not ideal, but you know, he's a good egg. He fights, you know, he hates Brexit. He fights musicians' rights. He's outspoken on that kind of front. Like, he's all right by me, Elton John. He's all right by me.
And I know he's always loved new music and he's always supported new music. That's been a really cool thing about him over the years. But I was like, oh no, but do it from afar. You know, there's no need for you to be tinkling all over some sort of like, you know, the Fall inspired post-punk jerkiness. It doesn't need Elton John on it, you know? I was like, oh God. And I don't think he really adds much to that tune. That's one of my more favorite songs on it, actually. I think it's got some nice, it's got some good sentiments. And there's great rhyming couplets and great little ideas and stuff all the way through. I'm just like, I don't know. It just didn't really annoyed me a bit. We'll see what happens with them.
I'm going to sound like an absolute wanker here, but you should have seen him live in the early days. Like in terms of what you said with regards to the front man, like he's James, he's a very, very entertaining front man. He's kind of like a raconteur. Like he was engaged with the crowd when he talks and very witty, like quick, very sharp. But as the years gone on, I noticed this first at Glastonbury, the acoustics in a tent don't really work. Like he couldn't engage with the audience because it's quite an intimate thing he did. Like I saw him at Rough Trade and I saw him at the Exchange in Bristol. But then I saw him at Glastonbury, he was like, okay, that's not really working. Like, he's not really able to engage the crowd. And then I saw him again at the Marble Factory here in Bristol about a month ago, and it was the same problem. Like, he can't really engage the crowds anymore. And I think they have lost something because of that. So I kind of get what you're saying. That would be my argument to, yeah, how engaging a frontman he is. But a lot of it was, yeah, his personality rather than the music. So I see what you're saying. But yeah, as I say, I think the new tune they played, bodes well. But they're probably getting to the make or break stage, I would say, in terms of where they go next, because yeah, it does run the risk of being a novelty. So it'd be interesting to see what they do, definitely.
Yeah, no, I don't know what you mean. And then yeah, just to cover off on those last couple of ones, Arctic Monkeys, The Car. I know we've talked about them a lot on these episodes. The album has grown on me. I was quite critical of it. I still have that same issue of, you know, every song individually, I think is excellent. You know, like I was saying, like little criticism of the Yard Act's lyrics and things. Whereas lyrically, I think he's an absolute genius. He's a poet. And, you know, I love the way he delivers it. You know, I'm a huge Serge Gainsbourg fan. So like that, he's got definitely elements of Serge. And, you know, and you can, each track you can focus in on, you know what? No, I'm not going to listen to him. I'm going to listen to the music. And every song is doing different things in the music as well. And you know, so I think it is great. And it's definitely grown on me. And it probably is the best album of the year, to be fair. I think it is the best in terms of, you know, what they're doing, the idea behind it, everything. I don't think anything has bettered it. But personally, to have each individual song as a whole, I find it a bit tiring, to be honest. Like, that's probably down to the vocal performance on every track. But every individual song, there's something that takes my breath away or makes me go, oh, you want to applaud it or chef's kiss it, you know, because it's so fucking good. But yeah, and I think Body Paint is probably the song of the year for me.
I was literally just going to say the same. I'd say that's regardless, that's certainly the best. I think, well, my song of the year, definitely.
Of body paint on your legs and on your arms and on your face, there's still a trace of body paint on your legs and on your arms and on your face, there's still a trace of body paint on your legs and on your arms and on your face, there's still a trace of body paint on your legs and on your arms.
Yeah, and then the only other song that I think touches that as song of the year is from Liam's album. So Liam's album, it's my most listened to album. It's one I go back to again and again. Don't Go Halfway is my song of the year, I think, up there with Body Paint. It's because I just love it. That's my favorite style of music, that kind of, it's got that sort of late 60s psychedelic vibe to it, but I just think it's really brilliantly structured. So that's my most listened to kind of, no, I think my most listened to song of the year is Diamond in the Dark, I think. But I think that Don't Go Halfway is my song of the year. And then just to cover off, like Wet Leg, really enjoyed them in that sort of, you know, they've definitely got that kind of Britpop quirkiness about them. I love the fact they're so potty mouthed, you know, I've listened to a lot of Radio 1 over the last year, because I do the school run most days and I've got, you know, young kids in the car who choose to listen to Radio 1. And so I get a lot of, you know, stuff that doesn't really appeal to me. But then they've played loads of Wet Leg, you know, like they've been all over Radio 1, Shay Long and Your Mum and Wet Dream, all of which I think are great singles. But the one thing I thought was interesting, though, is I was listening to them on the other day, and Spotify did that thing where it carries on playing songs similar to it. But it looked like, so the album had finished and this song came on and I thought, like, oh, this is great. Is this like one of their B-sides or tracks I didn't know? And I looked up and it was bloody, it had gone on to play Florence and the Machine. I'm like, oh, that says a lot, actually, that, because I'm not a fan of Florence. But it's interesting, isn't it, when you take it out of context. I was like, oh, wow, oh, I really like this one. It's like, oh, it was bloody Florence. But, you know, but so no, I do think, you know, they tick that box for me. They scratch that itch because they've just got that Britpop-y sort of sound that I love. I think the guitars are great. And as I said, the cheekiness, the rudeness to it, the comedy in the songs and everything, and the quirkiness. Maybe they maybe lack a little bit of heart. And maybe in future years, that's might be the next step for them to sort of develop those, you know, they sort of move away from the arch sort of cheeky quirkiness and go a bit more into the more heart pounding stuff or the more touching stuff.
I need to lay down, only just got up. I feel so uninspired. I feel like giving up. I feel like someone has punched me in the guts, but I kinda like it cause it feels like being.
on that front, another album that I enjoyed this year was The Big Moon, their third album. And this was sort of similar. I've Wet Leg and The Big Moon, especially debut albums, I think were very similar, and they both have that kind of Elastica, Sleeper kind of Britpoppy quirkiness. Whereas this album was much more about the front woman being pregnant and then having her child. And so it got away from a lot of the sort of the quirkiness of the debut. And then I didn't listen to the second album a huge amount, to be honest. I can't remember how the second album. But then this one was much more focused and sort of, you know, those themes were there about parenthood and things like that, which was really lovely. But then you miss the quirkiness and the funniness and the cheekiness of the original. So it's a tricky one. But no, it was another album I enjoyed.
I quite like that one. It didn't. I find the Big Moon a little bit wishy washy to me, to be honest. It doesn't really stick. I can kind of like I can appreciate it, but it doesn't really land for me. I mean, one album I forgot to mention was Yeah. Similarly, Burning would be in my top three singles of the year. I'd say that's a brilliant album. It came back kind of firing on all cylinders, as it were. But Big Moon, Big Moon, okay. That's all I kind of got to say about them, really. Do you know what I mean? I think they just haven't stuck with me yet. Like, we made the comparison to Bull Palace a few weeks ago, and similar kind of way. Like, I want to like them more, but you know, I don't go back to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
What about gigs of the year?
Gigs of the year. Well, I've been to a handful, and you've been to like 5,000. So I'll just cover off mine. I mean, like, obviously Liam and Ebworth was huge. Kasabian supporting were brilliant. I saw Divine Comedy in Oxford doing their greatest hits tour. That was excellent. And he's, you know, he was on great form, Neil Hannon. He's a brilliant sort of performer and very, very witty. He had quite a bad cold, I think, and so he was sort of making jokes about that the whole way through. But yeah, that was really great. What about yourself?
Where to start? I mean, the one that jumps out is Macca at Glastonbury, just because of how special it was. But it's been a vintage year, really. Like the Manics at Club E4 Bath, if I'd see them in a kind of tiny little venue, that was pretty special. The Musics reunion, first reunion gig at the Barrowlands, that was very, really, really special. Macca at Glastonbury, that Peter Blake gig the other week. I saw Bono do his book tour, and there was a bit of kind of singing and a bit of music within that. That was quite good, depending on how how you feel about you two. Johnny Marr in Cardiff, that was great. Kraftwerk, brilliant. Yeah, the list kind of goes on, really. Like, those ones kind of leap out. I mean, Noel at Glastonbury was kind of more of a kickoff than actually a great gig in itself. I don't know. I think maybe because the set list was quite tired by that point, it wasn't as good as it could have been. But Noel Gallagher at Magic Hour on Saturday night at Glastonbury on the Pyramid was, been a one something I wanted to tick off. Looking forward to him freshening his set up for next year, got to say. It's been an excellent year, gig wise.
Excellent. Yeah, and then just going off topic, I'd say my favorite three films of the year, if you want to do that. I mentioned that on Twitter the other day, so I'll pick that up. RRR, which is this completely mad, it's in the Telugu language, so it's not Bollywood. I think they call it Nollywood, but that was brilliant. Just the most ridiculous, over the top, incredible action, romance, adventure, musical. It was just the most incredible thing. Like, this is when Indian cinema does kind of over the top, they fucking nail over the top. And RRR was the most cinema experience of the year, 100%. Also, Moon Age Daydream, the Bowie documentary, was absolutely fantastic, an incredible piece of work. And also, having followed director Brett Morgan on Twitter, he sort of given some breakdowns of behind the scenes and all the work they did as well to like restore. They color coded, they color corrected and changed all of this footage that they had. It's amazing. You know, just, you don't even think about it. You just watch it and go, oh, that was great. But then you think, wow, the amount of work that went into getting all this footage and you know, remastering and stuff is amazing. And then Banshees of Inisherin, you know, once again, as a, you know, I love McDonough's work, and he's just brilliant. Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson. This really, you couldn't be any more different to RRR. Much smaller story, but so fascinating and brilliantly put together. And this incredible character study. You're laughing, you're crying at the same time. I loved it. And then on TV, House of the Dragon coming back, get the Game of Thrones spin-off. Game of Thrones had really pissed me off in like the last couple of years. So when it's like, it's coming back, oh, okay. But then it was mesmerizing. You're sort of getting those vibes again of how Game of Thrones, when it was great, you know. So anyway, there you go. There's some non-musical highlights of the year.
Yeah, I second that. Moon Age Daydream, probably my film of the year. Yeah, I can't really add anything more to what you've said, but yeah, just if you're a Bowie fan, I mean, I'm so glad I saw it at the IMAX. Like, it's so, because it's, again, it's so immersive. So I'm so glad I saw it at the IMAX. But yeah, equally would be as great as you, for those who watch it on DVD. I've just been watching The White Lotus, actually, and I've got one episode left, and that might be a late TV show of the year for me, to be honest. I don't even know what it is about it. It's just, well, it's just so well written, I think, is what it is about it. But like, so much a leap on from the second series. But Better Call Saul would probably be my show of the year, just, I think, a fitting finale to the Breaking Bad universe. I went back recently and did like a rewatch of like them all in kind of linear order. Actually, yeah, Better Call, one thing I'd say about Better Call Saul is, you gave up on it because you, for whatever reason, I'd recommend, now you can binge it, do that, because it adds so much more to it rather than once a week, as you know, TV programs traditionally used to be. I think this is a really kind of benefit from the binge era. So yeah, that's my tip. We're doing the non-music.
There you go.
Anyone cares about that?
Yeah, no, I did. I love Better Call Saul, actually. It was great. Brilliant show. Right, cool. All right, Richard. Well, thank you very much. It's been a great year. And yeah, here's to next year. We should have some...
Do you not want to discuss Noel at all? Do you not want to discuss anything about Noel?
But what have we covered, Noel, didn't you? What else? What did Noel do?
Well, you had the demo at the beginning of the year, trying to find the one that's been and gone. Obviously, we should look at that. You had his cover of Valentine's Day. From Bowie, which was great. You obviously had Pretty Boy. I mean, I know you've spoken about all these episodes gone past, but you know, it seems remiss not to talk about Noel G a little bit more, really.
I completely forgot about that Valentine's Day. Yeah, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, great way to start the year. And yeah, quite a faithful cover, but he put enough of his stamp on it to make it good. I suppose he's just been hunkering down, hasn't he, really? It doesn't feel like he's been out of the limelight, I suppose, because he toured and obviously the hoo-ha around Glastonbury and stuff. But it doesn't feel like he's been away, but I suppose he kind of has. So I suppose we've had Pretty Boy and obviously the feedback thing, as we know, album and dates, you know, next year to look forward to. But I suppose a relatively quiet year for Noel, I guess, in comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I mean, it'll be a big year for him next year. I know there's a load of summer shows, but they all tend to be those sort of small festivals or small, like, whether it's bespoke. A festival that he's a headliner or whether it's own little gigs. You know, there's been loads of those announced, haven't there? With some different, lots of different support bands like Johnny Marr and Tom Meehan and various people. So, so I'll definitely have to, I haven't booked for any yet, but I'm going to definitely get out and see him. What about yourself?
I've got tickets for Crystal Palace with Johnny Marr because I saw Ashcroft there in the summer and I loved it as a venue. I thought it was great, like a nice kind of intimate little bowl. I'm sure I'll probably catch him at other dates, but that's the only I've got in so far. Just say in terms of, like, I think one of the things about the Oasis world as well is the relaunch of Stop Crying Your Heart Out website, which I think is once again recommend to anyone who's got, well, I was going to say, if he's got a spare few minutes, you'll need a lot of time to kind of go through that in granular detail. Like the amount of stuff that Louise has put in there and the interview she's pulled out. Like I went through it and had an afternoon reading through it and just like, oh God, I forgot that. Like little gems like, oh yeah, All Around the World was supposed to be a Christmas single in 97, but for whatever reason it was put back to January. And just little things, little kind of little tidbits of information like that, that, you know, obviously we as the geeks love, and you know, nuggets, as we call them, but of information. Like it's, yeah, it puts everything else out there in terms of Oasis kind of his archives, really, to shame. But fully recommended.
Absolutely. And a funny little thing happened the other day. So Louise had done a post saying, I think that the Oasis social accounts watch for the Stop Crying Your Heart Out posts, because she always does all the anniversary posts today, as you know, and it was whatever was released on the 19th of December 1994, because that was the Monday. But Louise had done a post. It was like in the Agatha Christie trial, where, you know, that whichever one it was, Rooney or Vardy, was putting in like deliberate mistakes into messages to people, then see what would be leaked, so then they would figure out who was doing the leaking. So Oasis posted, oh, on this day, and this is on the 18th of December, whatever was released a single in 1994, and then it was like, no, it wasn't, it was the 19th of December. But I looked back and Louise had posted 18th of December 1994, but it was almost like, Louise, did you do that on purpose to see if Oasis copied you? But then, and they did, and sort of, and she didn't do it on purpose, it was her mistake, but then the fact that Oasis copied her. And then a bunch of other people, then Absolute Radio and all these other people, like, on this day. So obviously no one went and checked. Or was it actually the 18th of December? No, they just all based it on that one. But anyway, so yeah.
The power Louise holds.
I know. But no, I completely agree. I've had a flick through that website and it's the ultimate archive. It's the ultimate. And it's not finished, is it? There's more stuff to come. So yeah, stop crying your heart out.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, and just all the details about collaborations and stuff. And although, bless her, she listened to our collaborations episode as research. So, you know, we played our part.
Absolutely.
Helping her to add to the website. But yeah, incredible achievement.
Wonderful. All right. Well, look, if I don't speak to you before, Richard, have an excellent Christmas. And
to you, mate.
And here's to another great year in 2023.
Yeah. It's onwards.